Good morning, and as the lady said, this is Chris English welcoming you to another edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme that we hope will provide you with a look at our world, both in and around the city of Brighton and Hove and further afield, all for both our older listeners and those not so old. In this programme, we'll be hearing just how badly both our local and national charities have been affected by COVID-19 from Naomi Phillips from the British Red Cross. There'll be some news on how you can improve your health by eating more mushrooms from nutritionist Madeline Shaw. Plus, we'll be hearing from TV vet Mark Evans and Maddie Roberts from Cats Protection about a new cat food breakthrough that promises to eliminate allergens. Dr. Zach Seidler will be bringing us news on a new scheme from an organisation called Movember. And no, it's not about growing a moustache. And finally, local businessman Luke Davis will be here with the latest info on his new addition to Hove Seafront called Rockwater Fish Shack. So that's all to come in this edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme that's made for Brighton's only truly local radio station, Radio Reverb, by Grey Matters Productions, and is broadcast on 97.2 FM, DAB Digital Radio, on your smart speaker, and online by just putting Radio Reverb into Google, or whatever search engine you choose to use, and selecting Listen Live. Now, we're told that for many of us, the last few months in lockdown have been incredibly difficult, and the pandemic has left an indelible mark on all of our lives. Our attitudes and our values towards our communities or those in need have changed forever. And new data shows that the total donation value, including money given to the NHS, declined by an amazing 44% in the month following lockdown. To find out more, we're joined by Joe Barnett, Executive Director of Virgin Money Giving, and Vari Lambert from the Charity Mind. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Morning.
Starting with Joe, how significant are those statistics?
Actually, what we've seen is an increase in overall donations when you include the NHS, because people have been very generous towards those really of the moment frontline services such as the NHS and their Charities Together campaign. But what we have seen is that our usual charities, so the charities that we know and love both in our communities and on our high streets, they're the charities that have seen a 44% decline in the first month of the lockdown and the pandemic in their usual income. And that's very significant and due primarily to things like the cancellation or postponement of their own events or of the mass participation events that they would normally be seeing really start to get momentum in the spring. So the London Marathon, Landmarks Half, Moonwalk, all of those kind of activities that we'd normally see running throughout the spring and summer.
And how do you think that's affected the people that are raising the money, the runners in the marathon and people like that?
Well, most people are raising money because they feel very passionate about the cause. And so some of those people have, put their fundraising on pause. If they're hoping to still do the marathon in the autumn, they'll kick it off again, hopefully, in the summer. And so that's a temporary delay. Some people, their events have just been cancelled, and therefore they're trying to come up with other creative ways to raise money. And so what we have seen is people, when they can't do their half marathon or their triathlon, start to come up with their own ways of raising money. That might be shaving their heads or running around their garden 200 times or walking up their stairs and climbing an equivalent of a mountain. So we have seen a lot of creativity, but what we haven't had is those sort of events put on where thousands of people get together and you get into the habit of sending out your fundraising page link and getting people to donate and support you. And so that's the difference that we're trying to make up at the moment.
How significant is it for the charities? And perhaps we can ask Vari this question. Just that, Vari, how significant is it for Mind?
So like most of the charity sector, Mind's income has been affected by the coronavirus. For us, it's largely due to the closure of our 167 charity shops. And as well as we've already mentioned, the cancellation and postponement of events such as the London Marathon. What we've done in response to this is we've launched an emergency appeal, which is headed up by Stephen Fry. We've had an incredible response from the public. We've had donations from corporate partners, and we've also had donations from people, whether it's £10 or £20. But we've noticed that the demand on our services is really high, so we need to be able to help support as many people as we can. So we're still welcoming any donations as part of our appeal.
Vari, that's great. And the line's not terribly good. Tell us, how can people get more details of Mind?
So if you visit the Mind website, which is www.mind.org.uk/fundraising, you'll find a list there of all the activities we've got going on. So we've got treks, we've got hikes, we've got marathons, we've got the Craftanoon, which I mentioned as well. And then you've got to do your own fundraising as well, and people can take part in whatever they fancy.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Ari, thanks very much. And back to Jo. What exactly is Virgin's involvement in these events?
Oh, well, so Virgin Money Giving is a not-for-profit fundraising platform, and we support people who are raising money for whatever the event might be. So that might be, you know, setting up a fundraiser page for a mass participation event. But similarly, we support corporate fundraisers, regular giving, appeals. So we support across a whole range of things. And it really, it's just a platform that's easy to use. It's not for profit. It raises as much money as possible for people, especially at these times when you can't do face-to-face fundraising. Digital fundraising and tapping into sort of virtual events and things is where we can really make a big difference and support people.
Because there have been criticisms of some of the fundraising platforms that they're skimming off a cut, as it were, from the money that's raised.
Yeah, we're a not-for-profit platform, so we don't make a profit from fundraising. We're the biggest not-for-profit platform in the UK, so we're about 10 and a half years old. Not all the platforms in the UK are. Some either ask for a significant contribution from a donor in addition to their donation, or they do take a hefty fee. The other thing, obviously, is the gift aid. So we collect gift aid on behalf of the charities, which is a significant amount of money. That's an additional 25%. And we do that for free as our part of our service to charities. And it's the sort of thing that we really encourage donors to tick when they're looking to raise money, because, you know, it's no additional cost to them. And actually, they can really boost their donation to their charity.
Finally, do you think that the fact that people have been furloughed, their incomes have gone down, there are a lot of people who lost their jobs, do you think this will have an impact on the charity sector?
I think the charity sector is no different from the retail sector, and I know that lots of charities will be concerned about that and doing their own planning. I mean, at the moment, what we're seeing is that people do have the capacity to be generous because they are still furloughed. There is still, you know, people aren't spending money in the normal way on their, you know, their coffees and restaurants and things like that. So there is still the potential there. I think in the autumn, who knows, but I think the most important thing is when people feel passionate about a cause because of the way it's benefited them or their family or people close to them. What we're really asking people to do is get creative and get behind those charities. They don't have to give a lot, but getting more and more people behind them is what's really important at the moment.
And how can people find out more info on Virgin Money Giving?
So if you go to virginmoneygiving.com, there's a whole section which is called Inspire Me, which gives you case studies of the sort of things that charities are putting on or fundraisers are doing themselves to raise money. And the great thing is it's just a whole load of ideas of how you could raise money for the causes that are really important to you.
Jo and Vari, thank you very much for joining us. We were hearing from Jo Barnett and Vari Lambert about how the COVID-19 pandemic has badly affected both national and local charities' funding. Now, we're told that mushrooms are especially good for us. And joining us by the magic of Zoom is leading nutritionist and best-selling cookery author Madeline Shaw. Good morning, Madeline.
Good morning.
Now, tell me, mushrooms, are they really good for you?
They are. They're fantastic. Well, specifically vitamin D-enriched mushrooms. So there's been some research commissioned recently by the UK and Ireland mushroom producers that one in four people are not getting their recommended dose of vitamin D, which is 10 micrograms per day. And vitamin D is so important for us. It keeps our bones, teeth and muscles healthy by helping the body absorb calcium, and it also supports the immune system. So just having 8 of these vitamin-enriched mushrooms a day, you can have your recommended daily allowance of vitamin D in just one hit. And mushrooms are great. I guess they're versatile. You can cook them in different things. They're very affordable. So it's just a really nice natural way to get that vitamin D in.
Now, you talked about, I think you said 8 mushrooms a day. That sounds an awful lot.
It does. Yeah. I mean, I feel like 8 you could have, but obviously that's 8, you're giving you the 10 micrograms of vitamin D, but you can also get it from being in the sunshine as well. You know, there is vitamin D sources from being in sunlight, but, you know, if you're really trying to up it and you are deficient in it, you know, it's a good target to hit.
Okay. Now, you also talked about different kinds of mushrooms. Now, all I can remember from my long distance school days was that there are poisonous mushrooms and edible mushrooms. So how can you tell which is which?
Well, if you're buying them from the supermarket, they'll all be edible. Don't go foraging. That's what I'm trying to say. But, you know, if you're in any major supermarket, just have a look out for the label vitamin D enriched mushrooms. And if you can't find them in your local supermarket, you can buy regular, just normal mushrooms and put them out on your windowsill, and they will absorb the sunlight and then they'll become vitamin D enriched as well.
Oh, right. Because I have these large flat mushrooms that I buy, but I keep them in the fridge. So is that not a good idea?
Well, no, that's absolutely fine. But if you want to kind of enhance them with this vitamin D, if you pop them out on your windowsill to get that sunlight into them, then they will absorb the vitamin D, become vitamin D enriched. And then when you eat them, even they're, you know, they're heat stable. So whichever way you like to cook them, you'll be getting that vitamin D dose into you.
Now, you talk about cooking mushrooms. Now, I'm always slightly worried about it because I do like mushrooms on toast for breakfast, and I was going to have that today, but I haven't so far. What is the preferred way? Because you could put them in fat in a frying pan, presumably, but is there a healthier way?
You know what? Like, it doesn't matter really which way you do it. I think it's completely down to you. And I think if you make them taste delicious in the way that you like them, you're more likely to eat them. So I always think cook them where you like them. They're really versatile. So yeah, mushrooms on toast is delicious. I kind of like mincing them up quite small and putting them in a bolognese, or skewering them and marinating them in kind of olive oil, balsamic vinegar and thyme. Really fun for a barbecue in the summer. You know, they really do go in lots of things, and they provide that really nice kind of meaty texture, which is great if you're, you know, trying to cut down on meat or trying to add in more vegetables into your diet.
So are they something of a hidden benefit, mushrooms?
Well, yeah, I guess the kind of big thing is the vitamin D, but they're also really high in antioxidants, you know, and the vitamin D enrichness is kind of its massive sort of superpower of the mushroom. And, you know, a lot of us are deficient, and we can see this in signs of, you know, fatigue, bone and back pain, muscle pain. Obviously chat with your GP, but these are all often signs of vitamin D deficiency.
They're a bit like a Marmite, aren't they? You either love them or hate them.
Yeah, I think so. But if you're someone that's not a massive fan, I think if you mince them up, put them through your bolognese, or, you know, add them in with other things, I think you might potentially be able to enjoy them, because I know, like, it's a texture thing. They can sometimes be a bit slimy. But if you heat the pan really hot And you don't add too much oil, just a tiny bit. You can get them really crispy and kind of golden. And that's kind of a very different texture from the sort of sliminess that they can often be in, say, a stew.
So you recommend mushrooms for everybody?
Yeah, absolutely.
And how can people get more details?
They can get more details on social media, on Facebook and Instagram at Mushrooms Are Magic.
Wonderful. Madeline, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Nutritionist Madeline Shaw was telling us all about the benefits of eating mushrooms. The coronavirus has been exposing how a lack of meaningful connections can increase feelings of loneliness. And many people worry that no one would notice if something happened to them. And a third actually fear that their loneliness, with the same proportion confessing they haven't had a meaningful conversation in the last week. And despite signs of community spirit making a comeback during lockdown, more than a third say their neighbours are like strangers to them. Life after lockdown also shows that nearly a third feel that they've no one to turn to. And for many, their lack of quality connections and loneliness is accompanied by other vulnerabilities, a lower income, long-term health and mental conditions. Well, to find out more, we're joined now by Naomi Phillips from the British Red Cross. Good morning, Naomi.
Good morning.
Just how bad is the problem?
Well, we do know from previous research that around 1 in 5 people in the UK say they're always and often lonely. And our new research in our report, Life After Lockdown, shows that the situation is getting worse for many people. So overall, we found that 41% of adults report feeling lonelier since lockdown, with a third of people saying that they haven't had a meaningful conversation in the last week. And we do know that certain people are more likely to be lonely than others through our research. So people from black and minority ethnic backgrounds, people with poor health conditions and people who are shielding because of the coronavirus, people with young children, and people with lower incomes are particularly vulnerable to loneliness at this time.
What can we do about it?
There's a number of things people can do. So the Red Cross has set up a support line. So if anyone is feeling lonely, they can call 0808 196 3651. But the thing that anybody could do is reach out to somebody. Try and be aware. If you do have a neighbour that you know is by themselves, for example, and may not be in touch with friends or family or other support, do think about giving them a call or sending them a message. Although we know face-to-face contact is really important, actually, at this time, we know that just reaching out, even by telephone, can make all the difference for somebody to have a conversation.
In the days when we used to go out on a Thursday evening at 8 o'clock and clap, a lot of people saw their neighbours at that time. But, of course, that's ended now. So would it be a good idea for something similar to restart?
Well, we do know that there's been this amazing upswell in neighbourliness and connecting people with other people in their communities. So I don't know if it's about redoing the Clap for Carers work, but it is actually saying as lockdown eases, as we go back to our normal lives, as we return to work and school and so on, let's not forget about that. And let's make sure that we're still connecting in with our neighbours, still keeping an eye out for people around us who may not be in our immediate family, but who might just need a little bit of extra support. We would really appreciate a chat just to make sure that they're not lonely and alone after lockdown.
I mean, how different is it depending whereabouts you are in the country? I mean, we're down here in Brighton, and sometimes people say southerners are a bit stuck up and don't mix as well. Do you find that around the whole country?
I don't know if there's any research that looks at the different rates across the country and what people's interactions are with their neighbours. What we do know is that loneliness certainly doesn't discriminate. So anybody can be lonely, and that's young or old, able or with health conditions. And therefore, wherever you are, it's just really, really important to keep an eye out on people, make sure people are getting the support. And what we're asking for is for government and others to make sure that there's continued funding into grassroots loneliness programs and other programs that can really help to tackle loneliness amongst people wherever they are.
Well, our program At Home This Morning is specifically for our older listeners. So we're part of that chain, I imagine.
Absolutely. And we do know that for many older people, loneliness can become chronic. And that means that they often don't speak to people for sometimes tragically weeks at a time. And actually, because of the coronavirus restrictions, some of their support, for example, carers coming in or friends and family popping by for a cuppa, we know that that will have been cut off for someone. So for people who are already at risk of being lonely or experiencing loneliness, we're really concerned that for those people, they'll have a sort of double whammy effect of the coronavirus restrictions. So it's really, really important to make sure that we're really focused on looking after the most vulnerable people, and that would include older people.
Do you think it's something that's lacking in society today, that we don't look after our older people?
I think that there's things that everybody can do, and I do think that one of the things that we've seen through the coronavirus crisis is this incredible community spirit, where people really, really show that they deeply care about people, strangers in their own community. So I think there's everything to hope for, and just really making sure that as we go back to our lives after lockdown, that we're continuing to build those connections and keep an eye out for everyone.
Do you think lockdown is going to end very soon?
Well, we do know that the events are going to continue, that some shops are opening, and that, you know, sort of people will start to return back to their normal lives. And that's really wonderful. And we do know for some people who will have experienced loneliness and isolation, actually they will start to feel a lot better as they get back to their normal lives. And I guess our concern is for those people who are at risk of being left behind because they're not able to get back to their normal lives as they did before lockdown, and make those connections that we know are so important for tackling loneliness. That's the kind of real issue here.
And the Red Cross are involved in this?
Absolutely. So we've been working to tackle loneliness for many years. We run our own Connecting Communities social prescribing schemes up and down the country, and we work with people on a one-to-one basis to understand what it is that they need and help to reconnect to their communities. As I said, we have a new support line as well, that we're supporting anybody who needs a little bit of help during this crisis. We know that tackling loneliness and social isolation is one of the things that our own people really want us to be focused on now and in the coming months.
Naomi, thanks very much for joining us. And that number again?
That number is 0808 196 3651.
Naomi Phillips was bringing us news of the British Red Cross's initiative to help ease loneliness. Cat allergens are a problem, or can be, for a lot of people. And joining us, Mark Evans and Maggie Roberts. Good morning to you both.
Morning.
Good morning.
Now, tell us about cat allergens and what can be done about them.
Well, a cat allergy, we would familiarly call it kind of cat allergy. People are allergic to cats. It's an incredibly common problem. We think maybe one in five adults worldwide suffers from it. And it's an incredibly difficult thing for people to manage and control. And what's occurring today is the launch of this innovative new food produced by Purina, Live Clear, that is offering people who suffer this problem another tool in the toolbox, if you like, to be able to try and manage it. And it's an incredibly clever piece of science. Most people think that they are allergic to cats because they're allergic to cat hair itself. But actually, it's proteins on cat hair and on cat skin that cause the problems. And the number one culprit by a country mile is a protein called FeLD1, which is produced in a number of places on cats, but primarily by skin glands, but also, interestingly, in their saliva. And when cats groom themselves, and we've all seen that, and they're kind of licking themselves and keeping themselves fastidiously clean, they're spreading that protein, FeLD1, in the saliva all over their coats. And that then gets shed off into the environment when hair is dropped and when dander flakes of skin fall off into the environment. And it's that protein that people are allergic to. So what this food does, which is just such a cool piece of science, is, would you believe, they've discovered that you can use a specific protein in hen's eggs, that if it's in the food, when the cat eats the food, this protein from the hen's egg deactivates some of this FeLD1 protein in the saliva. So when the cat then grooms the saliva all over its body, there's less of that FeLD1, less allergen on the cat to actually cause the problems in people. And from 3 weeks of eating the food, on average, the reduction in this kind of active FeLD1 that causes the problem to people is reduced by 47%, which is absolutely extraordinary.
And Maggie, how much difference do you think that will make to your life as cat protection?
It will make a massive difference, because reactions to cat allergens is an incredibly common reason why cats are relinquished to us. Over 1,320 cats were given up to us last year because of this problem. And that's about 5% of all the cats that are actively given up to us. And obviously, there are lots of other charities that also have those cats given up. So it's a huge number. And it's heartbreaking for those people to have to give up their cats. Often they've tried all sorts of things that can be quite traumatic, both for the person and for the cat. Things like bathing their cat every day. And anyone who's ever tried to do that will know that that's very difficult. Hoovering every day. And that's, again, traumatic for the cats. They hate the noise of that. And cleaning all the time, which actually removes the cat's own scent, which is the thing that makes it feel at home. So it's very traumatic. Or, you know, putting the cats out, or shutting them out of the bedroom. So it really damages the human-cat bond. So by being able to decrease the allergens, then people can actually spend more time with their cats and hopefully not have to give them up. We have a very high demand for the space in our adoption centres and our branches. So it means we can help other cats instead. And also it might mean some people who would love to have a cat but can't because of allergies could perhaps adopt a cat from us. So, you know, that would be fantastic. So I think something that's so cat friendly to help this problem is fantastic.
And Mark, is this going to be costly for cat owners?
It's going to be more expensive than potentially a conventional food that without this special ingredient. But I think, you know, this is a very affordable tool for people who really, really, really struggle with cat allergy. I mean, these are people who absolutely adore their cats. They want to be with them. They want to be close to them. And can you imagine having that amount of love for an animal, for your pet, and you can't get near it? You have to isolate yourself from it. You have to go through all these horrible things that people have to do to try and control it. Here's another tool that actually could be a very simple way for people to be able to manage the problem. So I think it's a big breakthrough. And there's loads more information about this on Purina's website. So you can go to purina.co.uk/proplan/liveclear. And there's loads of information about the science, which is incredibly cool, but also about the problem and how you manage it.
And none of this will harm cats or humans?
No, I mean, the big thing about Feldi 1, which is very cool in this particular food, is the fact that it deactivates the protein in the cat's saliva after it's produced. And there's still plenty of Feldi 1 produced on the cat and also by other glands on the cat. So it's not like you're stopping the cat producing Feldi 1. We don't exactly know what Feldi 1 does for cats. And that's why it's very important that you don't stop the production of it. But all cats produce it. It's not breed specific. It's not about age, gender, length of hair coat, none of that. It is all cats. And all cats produce it to differing amounts. So it's one of those things where if we can reduce the amount of allergen on cats, that could have a massive impact for people who suffer from this problem.
TV vet Mark Evans and Cats Protection League spokesperson Maddie Roberts were telling us all about a new cat food that could help ease the problems of cat allergens. Now, COVID-19 has changed the way we, that being fathers, grandfathers, interact with our friends, even altering their view of these relationships, with some 40% or more of us during lockdown missing seeing our mates. Well, joining us now, Dr. Zach Zeidler, Movember's clinical psychologist and director of mental health training. Good morning, Dr. Zach.
Good morning, Chris. Thank you for having me.
What about missing our friends? Is that something that is common?
I definitely think that this has kind of thrown a spanner in the works for many people. And I think that our friendships have maybe been the last thing that we've been paying attention to. But here at Movember, I think that it's something that we really want to be shining the light on when we're talking about men's health and when we're talking about men's mental health specifically. We know that social connectedness is the thing that is going to really keep guys above board. It helps them check in. It helps them make sure that there are, you know, having a laugh, having some banter, and it's really important for them to support their mates as well. And we know that COVID-19 has really stripped many men of that ability.
Does that apply to parents, fathers, and grandfathers as well?
Definitely. We find, even if you look at younger guys, I think it's specifically pretty important when it comes to dads, because we know that certain transitions in men's lives, they tend to lose friends, sadly, whereas women tend to gain them over time. And so men need to pay a specific focus when it comes to things like becoming a dad and retirement, when you are more likely to lose social connections. And we know that guys have been, taking on much more, hopefully, of the rearing and the parenting role when it comes to staying home for this period of time that has been probably very stressful. And as a result, there's not as much time for socializing. But hopefully, as things ease, we're really hoping that guys reach out to one another and check in, because our survey also found that nearly 50% of the guys we asked said no one had checked in on them to find out how they're coping in the past couple of months, which is, really just not okay on our end.
We as men are expected to be above all worries and things. We're expected not to show our feelings. Is that dangerous?
Definitely. I think that stereotype hopefully is dying out. I hope that we're moving forward towards an understanding that vulnerability and discussing what's going on for you is going to be much more healthy for your well-being and your outlook moving forward than is silence, which we know can be really deadly. Connecting with people is what masculinity is all about. It's about self-betterment. It's about, strength and connection. It's not about locking yourself in and, believing yourself to be weak and vulnerable and stoic and constantly self-reliant. There are so many people out there that are willing to help you. So the best thing to do is to connect with them.
Tell us a bit more about your organization, Movember.
So Movember is well known, I guess, for our moustache growing abilities in the month of November. But actually all year round, we do a lot of men's health programs. We focus on prostate cancer, testicular cancer, and mental health and suicide prevention specifically as well. So what we're working on at the moment is something called Movember Conversations, which is an online website at conversations.movember.com, where you can head and it gives you conversation starters for the men in your life to be able to connect with them, to check in, to have meaningful conversations that are really going to get you, moving in the right direction.
And is that important for fathers and grandfathers who are on their own?
Definitely. I think that isolation is really, really difficult and really dangerous for many people, because it's so easy to slip away from your social connections. So we want to be pushing through that stiff upper lip, that awkwardness, and moving towards connection and openness. And so I really, it's a call out to all your listeners to put aside 5 minutes today, scroll through your contact list and pick up the phone and give someone a call that you haven't spoken to in a while.
It's something we should do, but we don't, isn't it? Is that a male thing?
I think it's more so a male thing, definitely. I think that the idea that, definitely in Australia, as you can tell by my accent, we have a she'll be right situation, as in, I don't need to bother this person. They're gonna work it out on their own. That assumption is really dangerous. Rather, we should assume that they want to talk to us. We should assume that we want to connect. And guys for too long have tried to go it on their own, when in fact, strength in numbers is always a better attitude.
Thanks very much for joining us. And where can we get more information?
Head to conversations.movember.com.
Now, there's been a venue on Hove Seafront for years. It's sometimes been called The View, it's been called The Venue, but it's now got a new name. And joining us to tell us all about it is Luke Davis, the man behind the project. What is it?
Well, it also used to be called the Babylon Lounge as well 18 years ago, which is another name. So Rockwater is the new name. We were aiming to, we took over the site last year, and we were aiming to open it for early this year. And then obviously COVID happens and put a halt to those plans. In fact, as a side note, never follow me into an investment, because I've never bought a pub before in my life. I bought the pub and then it became illegal to go into pubs. So that the chances of that are quite slim. But really, out of necessity, we were obviously trying to adapt, like lots of other businesses and SMEs and entrepreneurs around the country, to obviously not collapse and hand the keys back to the council with an empty building. And we thought it would be a good initiative to try and get some beach huts open with street food in there, with an ice cream offering, coffee, cakes, vegan cakes, pulled pork rolls we've got there now, a nice fish offering. And we're working on the health and well-being side as well, because there's a lovely green lawn area and we've got a decked area out on the beach for doing yoga and Pilates and a number of other healthy activities as well. So we're going to fasten you up around the front and the beach huts, and then you can go around the back and exercise it off.
You're keeping social distancing?
100%. Well, the benefit is I've got a 50-metre decked area, which will have seating on there from the 4th of July. We've worked with the council. We've been brilliant through the whole scheme to make sure that the social distancing was there. But the benefit that we've got against others is we've got the whole of Hove seafront. So you can literally pick up your beer and your cakes and go and find a spot on the beach miles away from anyone else. So, yeah, it was a success all round.
But that's not the end of the plans, is it?
No, definitely not the end of the plans. So we made, because people have been extremely excited about the beach huts, we may well keep them. But the main site, which is huge, and we've recently just got planning permission through for a roof terrace with views of all of Brighton and Hove and beyond. And we'll aim to open that end of October, November.
What will go on in the building?
The best way to describe it through design is, I mean, it is a lounger, if you like. So, I mean, we'll open at 7 o'clock in the morning, so you can get your coffees and your pan of chocolate and your breakfast items. So it's dog friendly, family friendly. In the winter was where what we really designed it for. We felt that it would be fairly easy to get people to come to the site in the summer, but where the site perhaps didn't do as well as it could have done was through the winter months. So we've got a lovely fire in there, lovely comfy sofas, lots of board games and a really nice place to be with your family and your dog and read the Sunday papers and have some lovely food. So not expensive food, just really good gastro food, but also through lighting and design, the place will evolve through the day. So it's also somewhere you could go with your friends, the lads or your girlfriends, whatever it may be, and have a nice evening of cocktails and drinks and a nice meal. And there's three floors plus the decked area on the front and then the green at the back. So there really is enough space for everyone.
Now, the name is Rockwater. So yeah. Does that imply rock music?
Definitely not, no. So Rockwater was the result of months and months and months of discussions with a design and branding agency. Yeah, I mean, it's more to do with where it's at and how the design runs through and reclaiming lots of materials from the beach. And you'll see all of this cool stuff when people actually get to come to the site. But yeah, no, it was more about the design journey and how that name evolved.
Now, you said earlier that you've never had a pub before. So what's your background?
I own a number of different companies, but my main business is a company called IW Capital. So although I've never owned a pub, I've invested in 40 plus companies. So the main thing I'm good at is knowing that I'm not good at anything. So I just hire the right people. So yeah, that's what I've done. I've invested in pubs before, brew house and kitchen. I've got a lot of support from those guys and have a very good ops director and a very good general manager. And I leave it to the experts.
That you live nearby. So will you be able to avoid popping in and sticking your oar in?
Absolutely not. So, I do. I do have a lot of input, I guess, on the design side. And yeah, they probably do feel like I'm sticking my oar in. I went down there with a list this morning of all the things that I felt we could be doing better after the weekend. So I'm sure it does frustrate them, but they'll just have to put up with that.
Look into the future. There's a building along the seafront, just to the east of you, that's been crying out for being redeveloped, namely the King Alfred. Is that something you would take on?
I don't think I'd have the money to invest what they need there, but I definitely would be happy to get involved with the conversations. And I know people that could come up with the sort of money that place needs. I heard when I came down that it was looking like it was going to go through and they had investors, and a couple of months ago it didn't and fell through.
What's the timescale?
So the beach huts, I've got a license till the end of October. What I elected to do was just to wait to see, on the assumption that this wouldn't be going on forever, that if I had to, I'd open at Christmas or early next year. But it's looking like it may be that October, November, we can get open. And hopefully, fingers crossed, that will be without having to worry about social distance.
And what about the potential customer base? Have you got a particular group in mind?
100%. So this was key to this whole project, really, is I took over the pub, but partly because I literally live around the corner on Langdale Road, but also because I felt it would be the best way from a business perspective to make a success of the site was to build something that the locals want. Because what I was confused about is obviously in Hove, it's a very, very affluent area and you've got rows and rows and rows of houses and then they're not cheap houses. There's a lot of money down there. And there's a complete mismatch between the offering on all the way along West Hove seafront and obviously the affluence of the houses across the road. So my target demographic was and still is a local resident trying to build something for local residents, families, dog walkers, runners. We're doing, like I said, a lot of health and well-being from there. So we're trying to involve as many of the community stakeholders as possible, Uber mummies, underground gym, the Hove Residents Association, Friends of Hove Lagoon, all of these guys I've been consulting with, all the local councillors in my ward and the ward along. So we've really spent a lot of time trying to understand exactly what the community would want. And so we got them to name the place off a shortlist. Also, the shacks have been named by the community as well. Some of them are brilliant. Hove Shackshally is one of my favourites. Shore Shack Redemption, Love Shack. Can't remember them all. But yeah, so yeah, that's a very long answer to a short question. But yeah, the community basically is the target demographic.
Luke Davis there with news of his new venture, which is just a few hundred yards west of the King Alfred on the seafront at Hove. And that just about brings us to the end of this edition of At Home This Morning, which is our magazine programme that's brought to you by Brighton's only truly local radio station, Radio Reverb, broadcasting on 97.2 FM, on digital radio, and online at Radio Reverb. So until next time we meet over the airwaves, which will be in about 4 weeks' time, it's goodbye from me. However, don't forget that our executive producer, technical operator bar none, and my co-presenter Richard Davis will be here with his next show in just 2 weeks. But just before I do go, may I remind you that you can listen again to a selection of some of the recent editions of At Home This Morning by simply visiting our website and entering Grey Matters Productions CIC into your web browser. And so until we meet next over the airwaves in about 4 weeks' time, this is Chris English signing off as usual with Please Keep Safe. Bye for now.